Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another Black College 9 HBCU Baseball Podcast Series. Our podcast series covers strictly the head coaches of the HBCU baseball programs and the many things that they do to bring their programs around. Today, we're going to be talking with Southern University head baseball coach Kerrick Jackson. Kerrick Jackson is in a unique situation for me. Kerrick played, he came from Division I programs. Kerrick was involved in quite a few Division I baseball programs, schools like Fairfield, Emporia State, Nicholas State, and Missouri. The big one being the Missouri, which is in the SEC conference. So I want to get with Kerrick on his coaching experience, his playing days, the things that he's involved in, and what led him to Southern. And then we're going to really get into Southern baseball. If you remember, Southern was, when you spoke of HBCU baseball, you always mentioned Southern first. So we want to get back to that and get back to the nitty-gritty of Southern baseball with Coach Jackson. And like I said, he's came from Division I background. He was highly recommended, highly chosen to come into a program that's was kind of down, but he's bringing them back up slowly. And once the name was made and he was brought on, because he's going into his second season, once he was brought on, I said this was the right person for the job. But at the same time, I said it was going to be a slow grind. They brought him in because they built the program back up, and they're not looking to build the program back up in a year or two. This is something that's going to be a long haul, and he's the right fit for that job. Kerrick Jackson, how are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing good. Now, I want to discuss many things with you, but mainly I want to discuss, and we're going to start right off the bat. Your first college coaching job was at Fairfield. And that was the program that you coached in 2001. And the next season, you became the assistant coach at Emporia State. What brought you to coaching?
You know, I think that once growing up playing this game the way that we do, and when you're fortunate enough to have good coaches, it's as a player that is immersed in the game, I think that's always a thought for many of us. For me specifically, it kind of clicked for me after my senior year at Nebraska. I was there as the administrative assistant. They weren't called volunteers at that time, but as the administrative assistant, our head coach had been removed by the AD, and the only people on staff were the assistant coach, Mike Anderson, myself, and our administrative assistant secretary, Renee Brinkman. And so that January, Mike Anderson said, hey, since it's us, we have the money in our budget, I'd like to take you out to the ABCA convention and get you have you get that experience. So we went out there, and that's kind of when I caught it. He introduced me to a bunch of coaches that he had worked with in the past and that had coached him. And I was able to sit around in some rooms and just listen to some of these guys talk that had been doing this for a long time. And that's kind of what tripped it for me. And I knew at that point that was a career that I wanted to pursue.
Now, and that occurred after your playing days at Nebraska. How did you get recruited to Nebraska?
I was pitching in the summer in the Jayhawk League, and Coach Anderson had heard that I was looking to transfer. I was at Bethune-Cookman. We had won the conference championship, so it was the first conference championship in the history of the institution, the baseball program there. And Coach Reese, Brian Reese, who was the head coach at Bethune-Cookman, who had recruited me, due to our success, was able to get another job. And he took a job at Arkansas Little Rock. And so when he left, I left. I'd gone there because of him and the relationship that we had. And so when he decided to go someplace else, then I put it out there that I was looking to transfer. And back in that time, you didn't have to sit out a year. You could transfer immediately as long as you were eligible. And so when word got out in the league that I was pitching in, then I had a bunch of different options, and Nebraska was one that was close to where I was playing in the summer. Drove over there, had a good visit, liked what they were talking about and their plans for me, and so that's what made me choose to go to Nebraska.
But then at the same time, after you graduated from Nebraska, you chose to become a coach, and it led you to not only just coaching at Emporia State, but you also went to Coffeyville. Now, Coffeyville is more known as a football community college. How did that work out, that baseball? Because, like I said, Coffeyville is known more for another sport.
Yes. Coffeyville, the head coach that was there at the time, it was his first head job. He was an assistant at Fort Hays State. And we knew a lot of the same people. And when he was looking for an assistant, it was recommended to him that, hey, this is the guy that you might want to go after to come in there. And he and I talked, and it was a good fit, and hit the ground running.
But it also led you to coach at St. Louis Community College as well.
Yes. So basically what had happened was when I was at Coffeyville, Matt Ranson, who was the head coach, he got the head job at Fort Hays State, which was his alma mater. Coffeyville had offered me the head job at the time, but I got frustrated, and in my immaturity and younger days of stubbornness, I chose not to take the head job at the time because of the way they handled the process, and got an opportunity to go back to Jefferson College, which is right outside of St. Louis, which is where I was from, and the head coach there, who was coaching when I played at Merrimack Community College. We had a good relationship, and Coach Oster, that was the first time in my coaching career that I actually made more than $10,000 a year. And so I had a real coaching job, if you will, with benefits and a salary that could afford me to go out and pay bills and buy food and all that kind of stuff. And so that was my first opportunity to go there and have a real coaching job.
But that also helped you get to two big programs, Nicholls State, and then the University of Missouri. And the University of Missouri, that's a huge job. That's in the SEC. That is a major, big time.
It was, and it was. I think that it came as a result of. One thing that I always pride myself on since I've been doing this thing is, one, people's perception of who I am as a person, and then, secondly, what my work ethic is. I think that, you may find people out there that say, I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to coaching X's and O's. You may find people that out there that may say that, there's better recruiters out there and those types of things, but I don't think anybody could question my character, and nobody could ever question my work ethic. And so I think because of the way that I put emphasis on those two areas, it allowed me to be in a position that when that opportunity came open at Missouri, it made it for a good fit because I had already established myself as being someone who worked hard, who was a good evaluator, specifically with the time that I spent with the Washington Nationals as a scout, and was going to be able to go out and find players to help us be successful in that situation.
Well, then you transitioned over to Southern. And while you were at Missouri, you did a lot of recruiting. You basically built that program. You helped build that program, and you left a big imprint and with a massive success because you had back-to-back trips to the big championship game, the conference championship game, and in 2012, and that recruiting class, which was, they were ranked 24th in the nation nationally by Baseball America, and that a lot of those guys were the guys you recruited. Now, with that being said, now that you're at Southern, what's the difference between Missouri and Southern?
Obviously, on the surface, you look to the financial aspects of it first and foremost. You also talk about the differences in conferences between the SWAC and the Big 12 and the SEC, but I think probably the bigger difference is here we haven't had a winning season since 2012. And so when you take that into consideration and when you're going out and recruiting these kids and with the direction that I would like for the program to go in, when in this day and age of our society of instant gratification and everything's right at their fingertips, what the history of the program doesn't necessarily resonate with today's kids, unfortunately. I think we're in a society where today's kids, they see 10 minutes in front of them and 10 minutes behind them. And if it doesn't live in that window, then it really doesn't matter to them. And everything is social media. Everything is right there in front of you. So I think the biggest difference is being able to go out and recruit kids and let them, have them have an understanding that they will be a part of getting us back to where we were, that we're not trying to do something that's never been done before. It just hasn't been done in a long time. And because we've already been there, that once we can get to that point, then we can take the steps necessary to take us to another level. And so that's what we've been focusing on when we're trying to recruit the kids we're trying to recruit right now.
Well, what was the main factor and what became intriguing with the SWAC? Why was it the SWAC? And how did it happen? Because I've read things on how diversified the NCAA is when it comes to coaching, looking for black coaches. And how was it that Southern was a good spot for you?
I think it was more Southern than it was the SWAC, right? I think that because of the things that Coach Kadar had been able to do and the coaches prior to him, and as you stated, this was the mecca of black college baseball during that time frame of the early, mid to late 80s all the way through the early 2000s. This was the place to be. And so for me as a black coach, being able to put yourself in a situation where you're at a program that had that storied history, and then with the goals and aspirations of saying, let's be the first HBCU to go to Omaha. Let's be the first HBCU to win a regional. Let's be the first HBCU to win a super regional. And because of that story tradition, and basically what I'm doing is trying to lean on the alumni to assist us, to get us to being back where we used to be. And then again, as I told you before, taking it to another level, you have an opportunity as a black coach to get my first head job at an HBCU, of a program that has history, to recruit young black males and to have a predominantly black team, if not all black team, and being able to play on a national level, it's a win-win. And are there sacrifices that have to be made specifically from where I came from and those type of things? Yeah, there are, but those are things that I think once we get over the hump, those will be things that we look back and say, man, our years one and two were this, but years three, four, and five ended up being this. And I think once we get to that level and we do win that first regional, we change the scope and the perception of HBCU baseball.
Now, how do you see that transpiring into the 2019 season? We're games away from the season, as our fans are very well aware of. You're going to be playing in the Andre Dawson Classic, the Urban Invitational from Major League Baseball. Does it start from there, and how has the preparation gone since you have arrived day one on campus?
It does start from there, and the biggest thing that I've been trying to do is change the culture. We have a group of seniors, for example, this year that have never won. So when you have kids that have never won and don't know how to win, then the default always becomes, okay, what's going to happen next? So we're trying to get these kids in a mindset of, let's go out, let's make sure that we're prepared. Don't worry about what the end result is. Let's play the game the right way. And so we've taken baby steps since last year. We're taking baby steps this year just to get our guys to think the game, to increase their baseball IQ. We have athletic kids, but when it comes to the X's and O's, and being able to go out and play the game the way that it should be played at a very high level, we're a little bit short in that. And so that's what our focus is, and my challenge to the team this year has been, All I want you to do is play clean baseball. I don't need you to go 3-for-4 with 2 home runs and a triple. I don't need you to strike out 15. I don't need you to make spectacular plays. I need you to make the routine play. I need you to have quality at bats. And I need you to throw strikes and play hard. And if we do those things consistently, I believe that will put us in a position to ultimately be successful and get the win. But we can't worry about the win. We're too far away to talk about wins. We need to talk about playing the game right, focus on the process, not the result goals, but focus on the process goals. And if we can deal with those process goals, they will end up putting us in a position where we have those wins.
Well, you spoke up on getting kids prepared to play the game in their mindset. A lot of the times when I attend the HBCU games and I speak to the coaches and some of the players as well, a lot of those kids are asking, they want to go pro. And, you know, sometimes you have to be upfront with them and tell them, you know, you're playing the game now, but at the same time, you're thinking a little bit ahead of yourself, and you know in your mind that kid might not be ready. Because you're an area, I don't know if you're still doing scouting for Major League Baseball, but you did for the Washington Nationals, and you scouted for the Midwest area. The kids come to you now, and they say to you, how can I prepare after college for the pros? Because one of the things the kids are always asking me is what do I need to do to up my game to get to the pros? And if a kid is throwing 85 and you know he's topped out at 85, 86, then, you know, maybe you might need to finish your collegiate career and then considering, you know, using your college education to advance yourself. You have that issue?
Oh, of course. Of course. I think for the most part, you would think that any kid that plays this game has a desire to go and play professionally. And I explained it to our kids, you know, so they could have a better understanding of, you know, put into perspective that at the little league levels and high school levels, there's 5 million kids that are playing this game. And then when you progress to the next level, you talk about 50,000 kids that are playing collegiately, 10,000 of those kids being Division I kids. And then when you move up from there, now you're talking about 5,000 minor leaguers that are playing in the various systems, and then you're talking about 750 big leaguers. And so for them to conceptualize the idea of what those numbers look like and what their place is in it, it allows them to have some realistic views on it. But then we talk to them about what they need to understand. For me specifically, is baseball is not a physical game. It's a mental game with physical components. And too many times our kids think that this is a physical game with mental components, and that's what we miss. It's not about how much you succeed or how much you fail. It's how you deal with the successes and the failures that you have. And so being able to get them to understand, if you can go out and play the game the right way, your tool set will give you an opportunity, but if the tools can't be applied properly, then it doesn't give you a shot. And so don't come to me talking about playing professional baseball if you're hitting 220. Because as a scout, we're told subtract 100 points off the top from any collegiate player when you're looking at putting them in the professional ranks. So if you're hitting 220 in the SWAC, well, you got no shot to go on and play professionally. And so just, I'm a realist, and when I'm talking to our kids and explaining to them about those kind of things. So for some of you, yes, pro ball is there, but how bad do you want it, and understand you have to work much, much harder than what you're working now, more mentally than physically, to give yourself those opportunities.
And are kids susceptible to you telling them that? Do some of them go into a funk, or do they just accept it that this is great for me while I'm in college? I've got memories that's going to last a lifetime.
You know what? I think some of them are, and then I think some of them are unrealistic still. And like you said, I was a Midwest Area Scout Supervisor for the Washington Nationals. I also worked for Boris Corporation, and I've been doing this thing forever. And for whatever reason, some of our kids will, such and such told me this. Okay, well, I've been doing this for over 20 years. I understand what such and such may have told you, but here's what I'm telling you. And so it takes a while for it to sink in for some of our guys, and then some guys know, you know what, that's just not going to be in the cards for me.
Well, the thing that I like, because I'm a former HBCU baseball player, and I still have memories of not just playing on the field, but the travel, going those roots of rural America where you will never see on your own, to me that was an experience, and I still think about it to this day.
No, it's, you know, our last year, you know, my first season in the SWAC last year, and being able to go to some of the different places that, you know, we played at Alabama State, we played at Jackson, we played obviously on the west side at Grambling, Prairie View, Pine Bluff, Texas Southern. So we hit everybody on our side. And that's the beauty of baseball, is being able to have those experiences, and different, I think, than any other sport that's out there, because you're going to some different places and you experience different crowds and all those kind of things, different atmospheres. It's what makes this game the way that it is. And then you have that excitement and intensity in the SWAC itself, so it adds a little bit more to it.
Well, to be winding down, I kind of want to, if you don't mind, discuss something that might be a little touchy situation. You came into the program when they were having some concerns with the NCAA, and it reduced scholarships. How are you able to get kids to come into the program?
You know, it was tough because when you don't have those scholarships, and specifically when we got in last year, when I got the job August 1st, we had zero 2018 commits. So for that upcoming class, we didn't have any commitments. And so tried to put together a class between January and May with limited scholarships was tough. We were able to piece together some things and bring in some guys that I believe put us in a position to be better. And then now as we're moving forward and knowing that in 2019 and beyond, we will have our scholarships back, but we still are under probation, so we have to answer a lot of those questions when people ask them. So we're still working on that process, but putting ourselves in a situation where it is what it is, and we manage it to the best of our abilities.
Well, Coach, I see everything in HBCU baseball. I follow it closely. Now, I'm going to say some things to you. You're not that far off, and I say that because a lot of those games that you played in, and you may have not been on the right side of the record, you were in a lot of those games, and I mean against ranked teams. You guys played good ball for the situation you're in.
Yeah, no, thank you for that. I thought we did. That's the one testament to our kids, is they competed. As we went through the season, I thought they got better with playing cleaner games.
Yes.
At the end of the day, we just didn't have the horses. I think that anybody that played us, and I think from LSU to Southern Miss to Mississippi State to Alabama, whoever, I think everybody will tell you we might have been the best seven-inning team in the country. But the problem was we couldn't get through 8 and 9 to finish those games off. And, you know, at the end of the year last year, I looked back, and we got walked off 6 times. And I told our team, I said, I haven't been walked off that many times in my whole career as a coach, player, anything. You're right. We were right there in those games. And, again, when you have guys that are used to winning, you win those games. They don't get away from you. So we have to be able to get back to that type of mentality so that those close games, we finish those when we have those leads and we come out better on the other end.
One of your games I caught, I think it was the LSU game, and the announcers marveled on how prepared you guys were, especially for the situation you were going through. Because you're correct, you guys were right in the thick of things up until, I think it was the bottom of the sixth, or maybe it was the bottom of the seventh. That's when things kind of went a little north. But at that time, this was straight up college baseball.
It was. I put a shortstop over at first base, and it had been the first time he had ever played first base. But my first baseman that had been playing, he got on the bad side a little bit. And so I put this guy over there. He goes and makes 2 plays that cost us 4 runs. And it was just him being a shortstop, and he ranged about 12 feet to his right instead of understanding the second baseman was there behind him and could cover that range. But he did it 2 times in a row, and both of those errors cost us 4 runs. And I don't blame him for it, because he had never played first base before. But it's little things like that, you know, again, those 4 runs, who knows what happens if that game's a little bit closer at the end.
So that leads us right to 2019.
Yeah, we're, again, as I told you, I think the one challenge is, I think the kids that we brought back, they understand what our expectations are. I believe that we've added some depth. that we didn't have last year, both positionally and on the mound. Unfortunately for us right now, this first weekend, we're going to be down a little bit. We've been hit with about 8 guys getting the flu in the last 6 days. And so that's not going to help us this first weekend. But I think moving forward, we're in a better position. But the goal still is ultimately, hey, let's just go out and play clean baseball and then let the results take care of themselves. And I think if we do that, and again, you'll be out watching, you'll see if we play clean baseball, I think the record should be different.
Well, Coach Carrick Jackson, it was always a pleasure of Black College Nines, especially for HBCU baseball. We're very appreciative of you as a coach, your program, and the many things that goes on at Southern. And not just Southern, but HBCU baseball, the SWAC, the MEAC, our large school and small school. I've always told you guys, no matter what you do, you put the product on the field and we will report it. And it was a pleasure having you. This podcast was more needed last year than it is now, but I kind of held off because I see you got your 1 year under your belt. The program is headed in a good direction. It's only going to get better, and then maybe I'm thinking that one of these days it's going to be back to that same old routine, HBCU baseball, Southern.
Well, Michael, I appreciate you letting me on, and I agree with you. Like you said, it will be a process, but the one thing I pride myself on is being patient, and so if others can be patient with me, I think they'll like what they see on the other end.
That includes you and your administration, Coach. God bless you.